our story phase. Grab your hammer so we can clear a path through the chaos and forge our own narratives in the Age of Sigmar. Your allies who did not retreat through the realm gate like some sort of coward this episode are...
I'm Will, and I know this book is about the Dark Oath, which are normally humans, but I feel like it should be about the Trogs, because Wilder Fiend, you make my heart sing.
All right.
And this is Josh, and I've given an oath to savage your minds about the Dark Oath Ravagers of these realms.
And I'm Davey, and in our extensive research, I actually figured out what the national anthem of the Dark Oath is, and I've got a little bit for you here. Dark Oath, they can you see? Something like that. Paul's not here, so somebody has to really just take that deep dive.
Well done.
Yeah. In this episode, we're going to cover the lore of the Dark Oath Battle Tome Supplement. Get ready to hear a whole lot of sworn oaths, blood sacrifice, and savagery. And then, if we have time after that, we'll talk about all those true inhabitants of the realms. How are you today, my tribe?
Wow. Doing well.
Yeah?
Yeah, doing good. How are you?
I'm good. If the listeners aren't totally shook by like the very different voices they're getting on here. Aaron was too cowardly to do this episode himself, but we are covering that Battle Tome supplement, so it's going to be a little bit of shorter one, which we laughingly say about a number of episodes, and they always end up being insanely long. We'll get to that in a second. First, I want to hear what you've been doing in the hobby. What have you been up to, Josh?
Working on some what's called the Flame Seekers, the warband for Warcry. Kind of working on modeling up the bases so I can start painting them up. So we're doing a fun league that's being run by one of our players, Ian, and he's got some really novel, off the cuff kind of designs and ideas. So it's kind of fun to roll with it this time and not have to manage everything. So it'll be fun.
Nice.
What about you, Will?
Yeah, I am working through a first edition Stormcast Star Collecting Box. We're starting to get more local like leagues here for Age of Sigmar, and I really want to take these Stormcasts and get them all done before the new edition drops. So I've been doing like conversions to make them part of my like dragon-themed storm hosts. So finding like dragon-shaped helmets to put on the Stormcast and wings for the prosecutors and things like that. It's been a lot of fun.
That's pretty cool.
That sounds awesome. I have been doing the usual what the heck stuff. So a whole lot of underworlds. There was just an apocalyptic wave of releases for them released some of the four old warbands, kind of revamped, and a new box set. And then one of my favorite things that Games Workshop has released in a long time is Zandara's Gravebreakers, which is this kind of love story warband. They've been really fun to work on. So doing that, and then pondering if I'm going to try and just put something a little together, like for the Path to Glory size games or something for fourth edition, because it's been a long time since I got to play the bigger game. Mm-hmm. Got some plastic rattling around here.
Yes, so. Join us.
Yeah. Well, that new mode, the Vanguard or something.
Okay, Spearhead. Yeah.
Spearhead. Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, I've got to do a better job this year of getting the Mortal Realms Con on calendar. We did that kind of year zero and didn't get it on the calendar early enough, so it's hard to take the whole weekend. Just where it landed, so I actually ended up
same.
Not being there for the Path to Glory section, and that's kind of my biggest regret about that event. But
me and Paul have been talking about what to do for our narrative events moving forward, because we don't know what's going to happen with the new edition.
I know,
but that spearhead mode just sounds so fun, and if it truly can be played in under an hour, like that might be a good go-to for something like Mortal Realms Con.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, honestly, that's been one of the biggest things lately for the past several years. That's been why Underworlds occupied such a good spot for me, is that my kids are at an age where they're not babies, they're not infants, but I still like to hang with them. And I feel like if I go play like a 4-hour game, I start hearing Cats in the Cradle playing in the background or something. So, so it's nice to play these like little 1 hour things. And now my son as well has gotten into Underworld. So he's been coming out to league nights for us, which has been fun.
Yeah, definitely.
So, but yeah, that's what's going on with us. We have a few plugs to hit here. There's more episodes of this podcast and all other shows. That'd be Path to Story, Dogs of War Cry, What the Heck's in the Story Phase, and who knows, maybe something more if someone's feeling ambitious. There is a live stream show that you can look at on YouTube. It's also Underworlds related. It's What the Decks, and that's Skylar, who live builds a deck once a week on his lunch hour. So you can go through the deck building process. If you want to talk to us, you can email feedback at mortalrealms@gmail.com. A really easy way to get in touch with us is the Discord, though. We kind of float around on there. And then if you want to support us, you can find our Patreon at patreon.com/themortalrealms to support the show. Get early releases of the Story Phase and access to exclusive content like the Pocket Realms, which is something I do with Aaron and have not done in a little while. Usually we have to do another one so that he'll finish editing the last one and get out.
Right. That's how you remind him.
Yeah. If you can't or don't want to pitch in monetarily, we actually really appreciate any reviews or word of mouth stuff you can do for us. So thanks to everyone who's doing that. And then specifically to something like this, we got to say thanks to GW for a review copy of Dark Oath so that we could jump into this. What was it, guys? 28 page pamphlet?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So it is slim, but that's going to get us to the story phase. Will.
The story phase. In the story phase, we delve into the stories, characters, creatures, and environments of the Nine Realms.
Man, yeah, Eric and Paul got to watch out for their jobs because it sounded good.
And that's just off the cuff. I need to get back to practicing it in the mirror every morning.
We'll get you a montage of training for it. So. Well, we got our usual questions here. So some of them we'll be able to address, some of them we won't. Josh and Will have gone to the trouble of sorting through some of the listener questions, and those that are addressed by the tome, we have interspersed throughout the format of this, and we'll get to those when we can. But again, it's a supplement, so we not everything had an answer in it, and if you don't hear your question in there, that's probably what happened. So start us off. Who can tell us about this race? We're Aaron's usual thing is to have you throw out a one sentence description, and we are always really lax with what one sentence means, especially if Paul's on the podcast, but he's not, so we'll see what we can do. I feel like I'm trying to talk faster just to be like Aaron. I don't drink coffee, but I'm just going to imagine what I'd feel like if I did. So
we're channeling it though. I can tell.
Josh, do you have a one sentence summary for us?
I do. So I consider these Dark Oath survivalists who barter oaths for power.
That was very efficient. I love it. Will, what do you got?
When chaos thrived and Sigmar ran, the Dark Oath survived and held their lands.
Nice.
Oh, man. You guys are really good. I don't have anything as slim and trim or good as that, but for me, it's the pragmatic survivors that stay behind when Sigmar and his followers left them behind.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'd love to tell you about the history of the race, but guess what? There's no real timeline in this Battle Tome supplement.
Oh, right.
I think what should be people should keep in mind is that this is a supplement to Slaves of Darkness. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
and essentially, it just kind of starts at the Age of Myth or Age of Chaos, I guess, when Sigmar closed the gates. Dark Oath were all left behind, and this is about them. Yeah. So this from then to now. So.
Yeah. So our usual march through the different stories that we see during the Age of Myth, Chaos, Sigmar, all that sort of thing. Those aren't there. So we have some overview information and some details about individual entries. And then actually there's a fairly long, it's not a short story, but a you know, like you get those little paragraph blurbs. There's about three pages of one story on that to kind of
the worthy offering.
Yeah. Yep. So we'll incorporate that. But if we were to give that timeline coverage, these are literally the mortal inhabitants of the realms that found a way to survive. That and we know that there are survivors that did not turn to chaos, but these individuals did do that, and they managed to survive a pretty horrific time by making some pretty tough choices, and so that kind of informs what we do know about these guys. So you guys have anything else you want to say about that piece?
We brought it up in the like Slaves to Darkness episode, but like the history of the Dark Oath specifically is kind of like the history of like the mortal realm specifically during the Age of Chaos, because it really like they are the majority of the population of the realms are these people who are just struggling to get by as the Godsworn Chaos and the followers of Archaon are all rampaging and killing. The normal people had to make hard choices to survive. And these choices became bartering their very souls just for that little scrap of power to get them and their tribe through the next day.
Let's talk this next thing about how they're organized. Like, how do they live? Like, what do we know about their organization here?
So it's interesting. They're, you know, as you might expect, they kind of set up in tribes or sort of. But they also talk about kin bands, which to me wasn't very clear. Is that a tribe, or it's just more kind of a smaller group within a tribe? You've got maybe multiple kin bands, family structures within the huge tribe. But one thing they did add in this particular book that we hadn't had before are these creatures called Wilder Fiends that they're kind of like protectors, but also prey upon the tribe itself. It's an interesting dynamic. And I'm sure we're going to delve into that in a little bit more. But yeah, that they used to be chieftains or elders who, you know, did not live up to their oaths. And now, for better or for worse, are part of the tribe structure.
Yeah, the one thing that kind of gets reinforced again and again is, you know, we're not looking at a bunch of blood reavers. Like, they're not just, you know, savage cannibals. You know, I suspect some tribes probably have some cannibalism or whatever. You know, the realms are big, but but those structures, those tribal relationships, those family relationships are actually really important to them, and they're protective of and value those relationships at the same time as you know, looking at this, doing what they have to do for survival.
Yeah. Right.
They may overlap, right? Like it's hard to survive out there on your own. And so I think those two things kind of naturally go hand in hand.
Yeah. And I really like the twist the Wilder Fiend has on the idea of like an ancestral guardian, because we see it in like pretty much every culture, like all over the world during certain eras, had the idea of your ancestors watching over you. But here the ancestor is a nefarious being who will do harm upon your people if it is not satiated.
Sure. Yeah. But it's not just a one way transaction. Like they do provide, like, you know, They're having to make these awful sacrifices to these Wilder Fiends and to the greater chaos gods, but also they're receiving protection. Like this is kind of core idea that the sacrifices they have to make for survival.
Yeah.
And I think one of the main things that the book emphasizes on the Dark Oath and their structure is that they have a transactional relationship with the chaos gods, where like they're not willing to submit their will to one chaos god. Instead, they will barter and make oaths to whatever aspect of whatever chaos god their tribe worships or they need at that time, and see who accepts it. So they're very independent sort of people. And again, emphasizes that they've only done this because they need to survive, not because they had a vision, not because they're looking for glory necessarily. So, really interesting.
We have a listener question. This is Chrisling. Of the various peoples of Chaos, what proportion of them are of the Dark Oath culture? And do Dark Oath always follow Chaos Undivided, or do some follow one god or demon specifically? So let's start with the first part of that. Mm-hmm. I can take that one. It did not look totally clear what the answer was. Like that, it's vague. It's some that is just not addressed, and some I think intentionally vague. But they're quite populous. But I don't know what proportion that would be.
Right. Yeah. I think the Slaves of Darkness kind of probably informs more in that area in terms of the masses of Chaos are these people. And then, you know, you have all these specialized warriors, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
This might actually, while we're on it, what distinguishes a Dark Oath culture from a different Chaos worshiping culture?
Yeah, that is a tough one because, like, getting a more in-depth look at the Dark Oath, it feels like we're just getting a more in-depth look at, like, how the basic Chaos population operates. Mm-hmm. And now I feel less certain about where, like, a standard Chaos warrior comes from. Mm-hmm. Now that we have so much depth about the Dark Oath, now I want that depth back to, like, well, who's a Chaos Warrior?
Yeah.
I thought they were the tribes people. Is it different? Because you do have cities like Karngrad that we saw in Warcry that was a Chaos city. And I guess maybe the Dark Oath are the ones who don't touch the Chaos cities.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. There's not like a super clear through line of first you are a Dark Oath and then you are a Chaos Warrior or, you know, whatever. In fact, that there is, when I say there's no clear through line, it doesn't appear to be any that this book lays out. So I think that's a fair question. I think when I think about, you know, the variety, what are the Chaos devoted peoples of the Mortal Realms? What are they looking like? And one of the coolest things about Warcry is all those different war bands that are laid out, the original eight and all that sort of, like, here's all the different kind of wild and crazy ways that that Chaos is, if not worshipped, then accepted or observed or what have you, throughout. The Dark Oath specifically, like, they have this thing, these carved stones that where they have to make this, they make these oaths, and they get some benefit or they get protection or they get, you know, you could think of it almost like a extortion protection racket, you know, like, all right, well, you know, I don't want to get, slaughtered by demons, so, you know, maybe I can keep the dark gods off my back for a little while longer by making an oath carving into this. So
And I think it will go into the second part of the question of do they follow Chaos Undivided or do some follow one god demon specifically. I think not following anyone specifically is what sets them apart versus say the Untamed Beasts, who they have a lot of similar, like, visual cues between Untamed Beast and Dark Oath, but the Untamed Beast follow a specific, like, sect or a specific type of worship of Chaos that the Dark Oath don't. And even though there are similarities, I think that is the separation, is the not inability, but not ever wanting to worship a specific god is kind of how the Dark Oath operate.
Right. It's a pantheon of aspects rather than this is the only aspect we're following.
And it's not even the four Chaos gods that we know. Like you said, it's aspects.
Right. Yeah. And I will not profess to be particularly knowledgeable about Greek or Roman pantheons, but from what I know of them, it feels similar to that. We're like, hey, you like could use some help with the harvest. So I'm going to, you know, I'm going to make an oath to Nurgle to, like, stave off the, or, you know, send those plague bugs over to someone else's field or something like that. You know, not that these guys are probably doing a ton of farming, but it's, you know, what situation needs which patron to help out, I think is how they interact with them. And in fact, pride them spells specifically on not being devoted to any particular one. Right. I think they see that as a sign of weakness, of a lack of mental fortitude to,
I think that's tied to Sigmar too, in terms of, okay, they all worshiped, you know, Sigmar in the Pantheon, and then he left and they're like, okay, we're not doing this again. You know,
he didn't
answer our prayers, but we pray to these aspects. We get something out and we're not devoting ourselves to one God anymore, kind of thing.
One of my favorite things, just like, you know, like little pieces are sort of salted in here and there. The usual thing where there's, you know, maybe a quote in the margin or something underneath. And it was, I love all the different names, and I've said this before on other things, but like the different names and aspects they talk about, of the Chaos Gods. And in fact, like you and I know probably more about chaos, like the structure of the Chaos Pantheon, than these guys necessarily do. Like they just have I think there was one quote they talked like Kursk the Raging Hound, the Bringer of Joy, the Thousandfold One, Flyblown, Morgush, and the Shadow in the Moon. And I was like, oh, that's rad. Like even the Great Horned One is in there now, presumably. Mm-hmm. Is that the Shadow in the Moon? That's got to be, right?
It must be.
I struggled
a little bit to figure out which ones for which.
Well, and I think because I was doing that too, and then I got halfway through and I'm like, well, I can't, these ones don't really correlate. And I think it's that they're not talking specifically of the five Chaos Gods. They're talking about things they've seen people do and relate that to an aspect. So Kursk the Raging Hound, oh yeah, probably Bloodhounds, but they probably don't associate that with the rest of Khorne. Mm-hmm. And like the Bringer of Joy is like, oh yeah, Nurgle guys are, they can tend to be happy, but I don't think there's not an association with pestilence or anything. Mm-hmm. So like, I wonder if they appreciate certain aspects of the Chaos Gods and not others. Like, yeah, we're not going to call on the disease guy. We don't like that. We like the Bringer of Joy guy. That's the one we like.
In other parts of the book, they also have other aspects named for this. So the, you know, even throughout the book, I thought it was clever that they changed what different people called the aspects.
It was a cool, it's a fun piece to think about. We have another listener question here. This is Domir. Would you rather follow the War Queen or the Chieftain? The Chieftain being, well, I guess I assume the Chieftain was the fella on foot that came in the original Silver Tower, but I think there's the, okay.
And then there's the new one on horse that came in this box.
So gents, which would you follow and why? We're going to give Domir the full treatment.
Go ahead, Will.
Yeah, so my answer is fairly simple, and it's going to be the War Crane because it's the one I own. but I'll just say they don't really talk about either in the supplement as much, other than like the role of a chieftain and how he kind of marshals the tribe. But my recollection is that the like War Crane is like almost a step above, because the chieftain is managing the tribe as a whole. The War Queen is specifically taking the tribes out to war.
Right.
And so if I'm going to follow someone into battle, it's the one who does war for a living.
What about you, Josh?
Yeah, I think I'd have to go with the War Queen as well. And just you know, there's an inherent risk in following the chieftain, especially if you're closely related or important to them. So.
And I will be contrarian. I'll go with the chieftain, and that's because I don't really like Zangor, and half the time he's carrying around a Zangor head. And so, good on you, man.
That's fair.
Drake asks a question that I don't know that we'll super be able to answer. How do Dark Oath cultures vary from realm to realm?
Yeah, they talk about, they specifically mention that there are Dark Oath in these realms, and they list, you know, the plains of brass or whatever, but they don't talk about how their cultures vary. And you know, I think it's more kind of falling back into that war cry setting, in terms of they'll probably do something similar to these war bands that live in this realm kind of thing.
Yep. Mm. And I think just the fact that we've talked about them having like different tribes having the different aspects of chaos, I think the realm you're in is going to influence how your tribe sees those aspects. That might shape it.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, the names, of course.
Yeah.
Well, one of the next questions we often ask is what motivates their actions? And we've kind of touched on this a number of times, but what motivates their actions and how do they accomplish their goals in general?
Yeah, survival.
Yeah. That's it. They've been surviving for a long, I mean, you think about, so what do we generally agree that the age of chaos is about 400 years. That's what we've seen a number of times.
Yeah. Something along like those lines. Between 4 and 5, I think closer to 4.
So if you think, you know, think about our own history here, like 400 years gets us back to, you know, 1600s, like that, you know, think about something that's been true for that amount of time. Like that's how long for them. You know, so it's, I guess then there's another 100, but,
100 plus now, right?
100 plus, Age of Sigmar, but it really was a long time to sort of cement the idea that this is just how things are now. Like this is, this is what it means to, you know, like these guys were living in dystopia. And it really kind of cemented this culture of, this is what we do to survive. So,
yeah, there's such a tragic aspect to it. You know, they make these oaths, they carve these stones, but each oath they succeed, they have to make a bolder oath next to appease the gods, and it just gets more and more impossible or improbable until eventually you fail and you suffer the consequences.
Well, and when you like finally get promoted and you're in charge, you can't make oaths for yourself anymore. You got to make an oath for everybody.
Yeah.
As a tribe, we're going to do this. And it just becomes so much harder. And you've got the misshapen form of the guy who failed before you watching over and judging you.
Like, just a straight reminder right there. So.
Right. This is what you will look like eventually if you don't die first.
Yeah. And there's how they accomplish this survival. Like it is consistently sacrifice, and what they tell, and this comes up. This is really kind of driven home in the short story here. Is sacrifice? It matters less what the sacrifice physically is, and more what the sacrifice means to the person making it. Which I thought was really kind of a deeper hit than I was expecting from this. So like, sure, you could drag back 10 Sigmarites and cut them open, whatever you want to do. But they've already been defeated in battle, right? Like that doesn't cost you anything. And so that's part of why these wilder fiends, why they are sacrificed, you know, they have to often sacrifice like 1 in 8 of the tribe or, you know, their favorite, you know, offspring or something like that. So,
I was trying to rationalize this as I was reading through it, and I was like, and the way I kind of took this interpretation is that you have to appease the wilder fiend. And I think in general, they could sacrifice, you know, they have this ritual sacrifice. Sometimes people have to volunteer if they don't have prisoners, and that appeases the wilder fiend. But if you want the wilder fiend to join you, then you have to make a sacrifice that has meaning, because otherwise, you know, they can't reproduce fast enough to have kept their numbers large. You know, if they're sacrificing all their closest people to them the whole time.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And the little short story, like he does give the Wilder Fiend like an Ark Knight, and it's like, well, I mean, he's got to eat food, and we're not food. We're sacrifices. Your food.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it felt like he was going to fight the knight. Like in front of him, I think, you know, that was kind of, he's going to like put on a show. He sacrificed, you know, I don't know if we want to spoil it or not, somebody close to him and healed up and gained power. But then when I read it, I interpreted it as now he's going to fight the knight in front of the Wilder Fiend. But I don't know.
Maybe I just read that.
Yeah. I kind of, it's all in the last sentence or two there, but
yeah.
I'm with you. And I think one more thing we talk about motivating, like, I think there's this sort of indignant reaction to the arrival of Sigmar and all the factions there. Like they, here's all these guys with, you know, fancy technology and, been living the good life, and they're waltzing in here saying like, we can make everything better. And they're like, no, you can't. Like you know, like we know what things they, we see the world as it really is, is what they're saying. And like, you guys are, I think hypocritical cowards is in the blurb there. And I think there's this, generational resentment that kind of echoes throughout all these, Dark Oath, faction, as to the being abandoned and then seeing, hey, oh, they're finally back. Oh, they've been living large. They've been living great. And now they think they can change things.
And one of those aspects is like, you know, especially with these, Dawn, you know, Bringer Crusades, like, you know, you come here to reclaim land that is still claimed by those who remain, right? You know, you have no right to take this land from us. We had to sacrifice so much to maintain it and keep it.
All right. Well, we'll talk a little bit about how the lore intersects the tabletop, unless anyone's got another thing they want to hit. All right.
So there is another listener question that's at the bottom that I think kind of fits in here, from Sage Mutt, which is, does the supplement make the Dark Oath feel like a dark mirror to the cities of Sigmar? And there's a few ways, like, things can be a dark mirror to the cities of Sigmar, but I want to hear like your guys' thoughts to that.
So for me, I'd say one of the biggest challenges there is that Cities of Sigmar has a full battle tome, and has, we see a lot of things from their perspective in all these different pieces of fiction, you know, all the Dawnbringer Crusades, the whole set of books that this very podcast has been working its way through. So we have so much from that, and then very little here, like just a handful of pages in this supplement. So it's hard to make a really powerful case about, yes, this is, you know, this is the dark mirror, because we just don't see enough. But what I do see is, you know, both groups survived the Age of Chaos, and they did it in extremely different ways. And so in that sense, I think it actually does hold up. I don't know what you guys think.
I think it's more of a dark mirror to the reclaimed, right? Those who had to stay behind but did not submit, you know. So this is like these are the ones who sacrificed and bargained with chaos. These are the ones who sacrificed and did not, you know. So I think in that aspect, yes, but not necessarily the wider group of Cities of Sigmar.
I really like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And my answer is kind of similar to y'all's. I do think it's similar just in the sense of like how they got to this point, I think is very dissimilar. You've got people who lived in Azir versus people who lived in the realms.
Right.
But like at this moment in like the history of the Age of Sigmar, I think they are a weird, interesting mirror in that you've got these two factions that are fighting over the very almost like soul of the realms, but they're not directly like big foes of each other. They're both trying to survive. The Dawnbringer Crusades are there just so civilization can survive and expand. And they've got their own little godly boons helping the cities. But we've got these other people who are making similarly hard choices, surviving just in these realms and seeing the different paths that they take.
Let's talk about some of the individual units here. We've seen four new units, right? We've seen the Dark Oath Chieftain on Warsteed, the Wielder Fiend, Dark Oath Marauders, and Dark Oath Fell Riders. There's not, and most of these kind of speak for themselves what they are.
Yep.
Is there anyone that you particularly want to discuss, gentlemen?
Just to mention, I thought some of the lore was fun for the Fell Riders, where it talks about even the steeds are tainted because they're eating the corrupted plants of chaos, and they have demonic ichor and eating corpses, and so they become kind of induced, you know, filled with rage and are bloodthirsty. So,
I think we'll cover this down below, but that really made me think of God Eater's son.
Yeah.
Where there's a similar dynamic where his steed gets more and more gnarly as the book goes on.
That's awesome.
Reminiscent of that for me. They go into, you know, a little more depth on the Wielder Fiend. We've kind of talked a fair amount about that. What do you guys think of naming these as Dark Oath Marauders? Like, that kind of sounds like a direct tip of the hat to the very venerable kit that has been kicking around for a while, Chaos Marauders, the, you know, other Conan the Barbarian looking guys.
Yep, agreed.
Agreed.
And I think, you know, the distinction they're making with this particular supplement is that they all make oaths, and that's not something they had necessarily before.
Yeah, it's another. It's almost not like they're like fully replacing the Marauders of old, but they're just adding another layer onto them with these oaths.
Yeah.
And one thing I found interesting, and we talked about it before, of like, they always have to one up their previous oath.
Right.
But it's always talking about like, oh yeah, you've got these young hot-headed warriors who will go into battle for the first time. How many of these like marauders, like, you know what? I'm going to kill the enemy like general. And that's my, like, so many of them, they could feasibly like win a battle, but take heavy hits because their eyes were bigger than like their deeds.
Yeah.
Or like they do accomplish it, but now they have to go even harder next time. And it just creates this weird, ecosystem of like constantly trying to do all this different stuff.
Yeah. You got to be careful. You got to pace yourself with those oaths. You know, you go too big right out of the gate, then, you know.
Like, your first oath for your first battle is just, I'm going to survive this one.
Yeah. The lore in the Marauder section, they talk about the kin bands.
Yeah.
And they do say that a lot of the kin bands will make an oath of first blood. So they race into battle to be the first one to slay somebody. And it's almost like, okay, well, what happens to those that don't make it first?
Right.
what small penalty do they take? Right.
So there's the four that we've seen in this kind of release box, and presumably will be available individually at some point as well.
Yep.
This was a small enough faction that we're able to kind of list off every other Dark Oath model that I believe has existed. And there's the Chieftain and the War Queen that we've already talked about. Mm-hmm. Then Underworlds has two warbands. There's the God's Sworn Hunt and the Gnarl Spirit Pack. And then there was a exclusive Tolgar Split Eye.
Yep.
I think you just make a rad chieftain or a unit leader if you want.
Yeah, there's no real lore to him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Dark Oath Savagers, this is kind of your, is there anything like how do Savagers fit in specifically, or are they just Dark Oath that have a cool name attached to them?
I think they were the precursors. They were the template for which this was built.
And then not yet released, there's Gunnar Brand and his crew. They're not out yet. Am I correct?
Correct. Not out yet. We have seen them in a Warhammer Plus Hammer and Bolter episode. And it is just like a tightly knit kin band of folks. And we didn't know it at the time, but we got a first look at like a Wilder Fiend and the weird relationship the Dark Oath have with those creatures.
I like many of the miniatures, especially in this most recent release, but in general, I do like the Dark Oath. Man, those Gunnar Brand's crew, that is kind of amazing. I really like them a lot.
Well, and within that crew, there is like, I forget the name of the character, but one of the characters is like a former member of the Cities of Sigmar.
Oh.
So, like, you're not necessarily, like, we talk about the kin bands, but we do have an example of someone coming in from an opposing society, being accepted by the tribe one way or the other. And they use him to, like, he can pass as normal and get into little settlements and scout. So even though the Dark Oath are very kin based and clan focused, those aren't permanent barriers. They're going to do what they need to do to survive. And that includes maybe taking in someone.
Yeah, and they even in the book they talk about how they're all beholden to Archaon. You know, the Archaon calls, you have to go, but they do a lot of raiding and things by themselves and as a tribe, and then that's when they become Ravagers, as they label themselves.
Got it. You know,
survival drives it all, unless Archaon's calling, and then you're
yeah.
With respect to some of those other units and characters that we mentioned, Mjolhern asked, have the existing Dark Oath units and characters received new lore? And the short answer is no, not really. Only just sort of bulking out the overall background of Dark Oath a little bit, but correct. Not no additional entries for them.
Yeah.
We usually go through sub-factions if it's a full thing. There is kind of one sub-faction. That's the Ravagers, a name... Yep. Unfortunately, very close to Savagers, to the extent that
right.
I was like, oh, is this just talking about the Warcry warband? And then I had to go figure out that I was wrong. What does it mean to be a Dark Oath Ravager?
So interestingly, Ravagers was one of the sub-factions before Dark Oath came out. It's where all the Marauders got lumped in. Yeah. And it really is like the Raiders and the folks who sit outside of Archaon's society. Like it always says like that they fight alongside his damned legions, but they're not a part of his overarching like military structure that he has, even though it's not really organized.
Just the wider inhabitants.
They're the Raiders. They're the people who live on the outskirts on their own.
That tracks. There's a it's not really notable special characters to refer to here, so we'll pass on that one. We've got a handful of listener questions that we haven't quite hit yet. Here's one that's just opinion. What is the best part of the Dark Oath lore? This is from Domir also, and then his follow up to that is, does Dark Oath feel like something you want to play from a lore angle? Does it feel like an AOS faction? So let's go with for Ichi. What do you think the best part of the Dark Oath lore is?
I'm going to go with the Wilder Fiends. I love that twist they have. It really solidifies like what they're doing and why they're doing it. I feel like without that sort of nefarious ancestral spirit, there wouldn't be as much direction, and I wouldn't believe like their reasoning behind a lot of what they're doing. But when you've got something living in a cave that will kill everybody if you do not give it a worthy sacrifice, it makes it way more understandable why you are making the sacrifices you're making.
What about you, Josh?
I mean, the big part of the lore I liked just for Slaves in Darkness in general is just the fact that these are the normal humans living out there who did not get to escape the realms and are now surviving. So just the aspects of that and how does that society function and what do they have to put up with? You know, where are they living? That kind of information I always found fascinating.
And for me, it was just this reiteration that, hey, you know, these aren't mindless followers of chaos. You know, they actually are devoted to each other. You know, like they... feel each other's loss, and you know there are relationships that kind of exist within that, and just the idea of you know, and I'm not saying these guys aren't villains, they are in the chaos faction, but villains are more interesting when they have motivations that you can identify with to some extent, or just understand, like they're, and when they're not just, you know, cackling Skeletors or whatever, then then they get they're more interesting, and I like them for that.
Yeah.
Would you, let's see, does it feel like an AOS faction to you guys? Would you say?
I think it feels, well, and again, I don't know what the intent is, if you play this as an entire faction by itself, or if it's really part of Slaves to Darkness. That I'm not necessarily clear on, but in terms of playing a horde of Ravagers, I think it would be a lot of fun. And there's some ideas I've had too about, well, could you just make them generic barbarians, and maybe they haven't submitted to chaos, but they worship aspects of a pantheon of orders and, you know, different ways, and they don't know. So I think you could play on it a lot of different ways, to whether you want it to be more good or more bad, depending mechanically on how they fit in the wider group.
Yeah. And I'll say like just like an hour or so before we started recording, they did come out with an article that said that there will be like an army of renown in the next Dawnbringers book. Basically, it will be a subsection, but you will be able to play a Dark Oath only, like as its own separate army with unique rules.
Nice.
It's just slimmer. So I really want to see what that looks like to see like how it plays as a faction. But I do think from a lore angle, I would really like to do this. Just playing the folks who have to struggle and survive. And I think it really does feel like an AOS faction. There's a lot of ties into what Norska used to be in Warhammer Fantasy Battles.
Yeah.
But the fact that we've got way more things like the Wilder Fiends, like the Fellstrider horses, and that the oaths just need to be that much harder to survive in the realms, which are that much harsher. Mm-hmm. I think it does do that separation to make it truly Age of Sigmar instead of Warhammer.
Yeah, I mean, I think fundamentally the core of this faction is, you know, if you look at the faction, it's not as dramatic a reimagining by far as something like, you know, like the Caradhran Overlords or, or, you know, our Sea Elves, the Eideneth. But their genesis is from this really essential piece of the Age of Sigmar background. Like their, their reason for existing and their motivations are really hinge around the, you know, essentially the central component of Age of Sigmar. And so for that reason, I think they fit in, even if they're not, you know, wild and crazy guys as far as, you know, they're how they look compared to, you know, how the things that they're pseudo ostensibly replacing. But yeah, so for that reason, I think they fit in. Here's another one. Here's one from Chris Lang. How much oath could a dark oath if a dark oath could oath dark? And that is just one of the great mysteries of the universe, guys.
I don't, but it's exponential.
Yeah, right. Well, it's like
gotta keep going up.
It's like with horses. Like if there's one, he can do three, but if there's two, they could do like 10. So like, it depends on how big the kin band is, I would say.
That's fair. Yeah. All right. All right. Drake wants to know: was there any mention of lesser chaos gods? I would think we've kind of mentioned that a little bit, that there's these references to these other names, and it's unclear if they're talking about one of the big four, now five, or lesser chaos gods, but certainly that's got to be part of there.
Yeah.
I will say the way faith works in Age of Sigmar, especially with a lot of these minor gods, like they may be worshiping aspects of the greater gods, or they may just be accidentally creating lesser chaos gods and how they worship these aspects. So we don't know that yet. So it's impossible to say.
That's a good point.
What Drake also wants to know, here's a doozy one. What is your least favorite thing about the Tyrant Sigmar? Josh, I'm going to make you go first here.
Oh boy. That's not a good answer yet. Least favorite thing about the Tyrant Sigmar. Maybe I'll take it from the Dark Oath perspective. And I think his cowardly existence, he doesn't come down to the forefront of battle anymore like Archaon. I mean, come on, man.
Fair.
Yeah.
What about you? What about you, Will?
I think he closed the gates too soon. There were so many people who, like, throughout different stories, we see that they're trying to get into his ear and they watch the gates shut. Like he could have maybe shut a few or held a few more open or tried a little bit harder to not send these people down this path.
I think for me, it's the coming back, and I think he just doesn't appreciate like how much it took to remain behind.
Yeah.
It would be tough to live. I know like they talk about him, you know, feeling that guilt, living with that guilt. But it doesn't always show, you know, when he releases the Knight's Excelsior on somebody. It's not really,
you don't feel it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, Other points of interest? Anything anyone wants to mention there before we start to wrap up?
I put it here in the notes that during the, you know, in the Battle Tome itself, it talks about the Dark Oath living in these chaos corrupted lands and how tainted it is and having to make oaths to even survive in those corrupted, infused places. But my understanding, and I think other books suggest that the Dark Oath also live in lots of hospitable lands, not just these chaos ravaged lands. So I thought it was interesting that they brought that up specifically. And I don't know if that's a lore trend that they're suggesting that the realms are uninhabitable in general, unless you have made these oaths, but we've seen in other ways that it's not. So
yeah, makes sense. We always like to cover examples from the Black Library. If you want to know more about this, there is War Queen by Darius Hinks. I actually did read that. It is looking at Dark Oath, but kind of before it was quite as well formed as this. And it doesn't spend a ton of time in Dark Oath culture. I think she ends up kind of brawling. I don't want to give too much away, but it's not going to give you a super deep dive into Dark Oath culture.
Just in some ways how Dark Oath interact with other chaos factions.
Yeah, that's a good way to talk about it. So God Eater's Son by Noah Van Wyn, and that is explicitly not Dark Oath, but it is mortal followers of chaos. And I think some of the themes that are covered in this are really well represented in that book.
Yeah. And even though it's not Dark Oath, it does cover like the struggle of, do you fall under a single god, or do you just try to take power where you can?
And it
handles that really well.
And then Not Yet Out is Dark Oath by Chris Thurston, and that is specifically covering Gunnar Brand. And I would say, you know, we can't say anything about the book really because we haven't read it, but there is a article on Warhammer Community where it's an interview with Chris Thurston, and I found it really, really interesting. I think that's, if you're at all interested in this faction, that's really worth a read there.
Do we know when it's supposed to be out?
I do not.
Sure, I'm interested in getting it, so I've just been curious too. I've been watching. Well, no timeline yet.
And I'll say, if we're talking about interviews, if you listen to the Mortal Realm story phase, we did interview Noah Van Wyn for God Eater's Son. And there's just an interesting point that I think you made earlier here, Davey, of like, he said, oh, my goal isn't for you to like the main character. My goal is for you to understand the main character. And I think that's something you'd need to get into your mind as you're looking at Dark Oath, of like, they're not good, but they are understandable. You can see how someone can go down this path.
Right? Sure. 100%. Does anybody have any final thoughts before we give our final? Well, let's do that here. Why don't you give me your review and any final thoughts alongside it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a Battle Tome supplement. We're not going to get everything a Battle Tome has, obviously, but I like what they chose to focus on. As much as we love going through the timeline, I think leaving it out here was probably the right move. So that way, because for the Dark Oath, it's all one big soup of chaos. They don't care about those milestones. And I think getting things like that 4-page mini story really is just more evocative. So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, they've been suffering the whole time. It's all one time.
with that being said, I do wish there was just like a little bit more by the time we got to the unit entries. It's like, yeah, I get it. Okay, it's the same sad guy, but he's on a horse. So because of that, I'm going to give it 1 point for that. 1 point. So 6 out of 8 oaths fulfilled.
Okay. Nice. All right. Josh, what do you got?
I liked the additional lore we had. Definitely an interesting take on taking the Dark Oath Savagers and turning it into its own faction. What I would have liked to seen a little bit more, you know, just examples either through side stories or whatever else. Okay, well, what does this faction look like in this realm? You know, like some of the questions we kind of got. They mentioned that, oh yeah, we exist in these realms, but even getting like a little sneak peek in terms of, well, how is that different in that realm versus this realm would be kind of cool. Yeah. So I'll give it 4 out of 5 fellow writers.
Yeah. Josh, you kind of stole mine, because that's some of what I would love to see is what do they look like in the different realms? I enjoyed it. Some of my hype is just on, honestly, on the miniatures. I think they're pretty amazing.
Oh my gosh, so good.
Fair.
I'm such a sucker for movement, and they have it. And then it makes the models that are not, you know, like the chieftain on Warsteed, who's, you know, got that more static pose, that makes that stand out on its own as well. So pretty incredible. So I know it's got a lot of mileage just for that. For me, it'd been cool to see, they had some nice quotes and all that sort of thing. I would have liked just a couple, blurbs, like here's an example battle that they're in, or something like that, you know, like the, basically the stuff that we usually get in the timeline, if they have one, if there'd just been a little bit of that scattered around, just those hooks, you know, to grab you, like, here's an idea that you can think about, that'd been fun. So I, lacking those things, but then, you know, understanding that it's a supplement, I will, I'll give it 325 out of 400 years that the coward Sigmar was missing from the realms. and we'll go with that. In closing, it is time for our reforging. No, but Sigmar Willing will be back soon. Like, coward. Subscribe, share, or leave a review. Join us on Discord, drop a tip on our Patreon. Anything you can do will spread the word of the coward Sigmar farther than we can on our own. Chat with us anytime about your thoughts on Twitter at The Mortal Realms. I'm not really on there anymore, where, if folks want to talk to you guys, where would they find you?
At J.E. Arrington, you know, on X, or of course the Discord is the easiest way.
Yeah.
As Sever on the Discord is going to be the best way, but you can find me lurking on X as at Age of Sever, or Blue Sky at Sever.
Yeah, and for me, I just say Discord's a place to go. I occasionally pop into the other ones, but it may be a long time before I notice something there. You can find all our Mortal Realms shows and content at www.themortalrealms.com. I am following rule number one. I just hit start recording, so we don't burn ourselves. all right, what do we come in at? Less than an hour. They said it couldn't be done.
You did it.